A cynic once said, "Fate chooses our family. Thank God we can choose our friends." Fate brought Orville and Wilbur together, but stuck Abel with Cain. Charlotte got Emily and Anne. Groucho was surrounded by Harpo, Chico, and Zeppo. How well has fate served you? Welcome to Sibling Relations on Mind's Eye Radio. I'm your host, Cole Hornaday. Mind's Eye Radio is a program tuned to the sounds of social change. It is written and produced by the Mind's Eye Radio Collective of Madison, Wisconsin. In this first part, we'll visit large families, single children, twins, and triplets. We'll see the best that siblings can be and the worst, and get a parent's perspective of sibling relations. So come along, brothers and sisters. Have you ever wondered what your parents went through before you were born? When did they decide to have children? Did they decide up front whether you'd have any siblings? Karen Schultz and her husband were looking for advice on the subject and turned to today's substitute for Dr. Spock, the Internet.
Through my 20s and early 30s, I did not want to have children. Now, my husband and I are willing. And we're trying to embolden ourselves with information about childbirth and child rearing. Not that data has any relevance in the midst of a child's temper tantrum. Nonetheless, we're looking to be better equipped and maybe less fearful. Since we're planning on having one child, or what some people call an only child or child without siblings, we've gone to the internet to find out what this might be like for the child, as my husband and I both have siblings. The quantity of information on the internet about parenting and siblings is extensive, but for only children, there is very little. What I did find out, though, is that we can expect a lot more information in the future. By the end of the century, 1/4 of families will have one child, which is up from 10% in 1980. The reasons for the popularity of having one child range from economic and time constraints to nature's limitations. Carolyn White, who started up a newsletter and website for only children, had repeated miscarriages after having her one daughter. The response to Carolyn's newsletter and website, released in January and June of this year, have been phenomenal. She says there's a tremendous hunger for the information she's offering. And no wonder. There have been a lot of negative stereotypes about children without siblings. G. Stanley Hall, the father of psychology, even said, "Being an only child is a disease in and of itself." And we've all heard the other negative stereotypes. Only children are selfish and lonely. They don't have intimate relationships and don't handle conflicts well. Yet research shows that children without siblings are very similar to firstborn children with siblings. Parents' overattentiveness and inexperience with both firstborns and only children leads to the same outcome from the children. So what we already know about firstborns, like their leadership skills, academic achievement, and trust for authority, hold true for children without siblings. And from what I read on the internet, it seemed the psychologist's guidelines to avoid having a lonely or spoiled only child would be the same for any other child. They need interaction with other children and boundaries set by their parents. The one time only children seem to really differ from children with siblings is in their older years. When it comes time to take care of elderly parents, the only child obviously does not have the help of other siblings. For example, the parents of a child without siblings may need to rely on their only child for rides to the doctor, shopping, financing bills, or if the parent is more disabled with dementia or some other debilitating illness, their only child may find themselves consumed with the elder care of their parents. Yet, as most of us have seen, having siblings does not guarantee that the financial and emotional burdens of elder care will be distributed evenly, if at all, amongst the siblings of a multi-child family. It's just that these families have a better chance that support may be offered by more than one child. So what I learned from the internet is really what I already knew. Raising an only child is just like raising any other child. Nurturing children's individuality and their connection to others is best done on a child-to-child basis. And what the heck? As my first and only, and my parents' first grandbaby, I suppose a little bit of spoiling can't be too bad. This is Karen Schultz for Mind's Eye Radio.
Poet Esther Cameron is the only girl in her family, and has often wondered what it would be like to have a sister.
I don't have a sister, but I've always wanted one. My mother had sisters, and as a child I used to love to hear her tell about her family. So I have a kind of phantom sister bond, which I keep trying to loop over various real persons. In so doing, I tend to project onto these persons my own dreams of sisterhood, restoration of community, and equilibrium with the earth. One such projection, inspired by a real-life friend who reminded me of a figure from Botticelli's painting La Primavera, gave rise to this poem. The title Primavera also refers to a visionary scene from Dante's Vita Nuova, in which two ladies appear together as if to usher in a new utopian era. One of the ladies is named Primavera, which means both she who comes first and spring. Primavera. Can you recall, or have you divined, my sister, the times when we brought in the spring together on an earth that did not change from year to year? Or when we paced, you walking a little ahead, into the magnetized space of a poet's dream to herald the return of the human spring? It was in the dead of last winter, when the spring seemed far away, that you wept because of your sister in that childhood in a bad post-war dream of a family that was never really together. And you couldn't see much intimacy ahead after her answer to your letter last year. Estrangements widening from year to year, in the middle, resentments always set to spring. The need to cut your losses and move ahead, the pain of having and not having a sister, all made you want to cut the nerve altogether, seal off the room of an unproductive dream. And then I come to you from a different dream, though no less the product of a bad year, a dream of putting the people back together. Does it feel as though someone is trying to spring a joke, a trap on you? I'm not your sister from that past. Our kinship lies ahead or farther behind. I come to you with a head unbowed, still holding the unshattered dream of when friends honored friends with the name of sister, with ceremonies measuring out the year, drawing up from the unpolluted spring waters of joy for all to drink together. Just now, when you have so much to hold together, there are all sorts of pressures to get ahead, and there is always that touchy hidden spring of jealousy. No one should ever dream it won't spring up like the thistle, year after year, in the fields between brother and brother, sister and sister. Still, I think you're my long-sought sister. We'll get together in the coming year. I see good times ahead this winter as we refashion the dream of spring. I'm Esther Cameron for Mind's Eye Radio.
Gaining a sibling is a bigger deal than it used to be, as expectant mother Charlotte Quo Benitez discovered when she and her husband wondered how her toddler would take the news.
I feel as if my daughter, Chiara, has grown up overnight. This could be because she is now officially potty trained, no mean achievement for a 2.5-year-old. Of course, only a parent could get all excited buying panties with 101 Dalmatians on them. Or maybe it's because she's just mastered the art of using chopsticks. I didn't teach her how to use them. She must have picked it up simply through observation. My husband, who is not Chinese, was always bothered that I can't remember when I learned to use chopsticks. Now he knows why. But the biggest reason Chiara seems to have grown overnight is that I find myself suddenly viewing her not through the eyes of a parent, but through the eyes of the child I am now carrying. In about 6 months' time, an entirely new person will be joining our complete little family, altering it forever. He or she will, I hope, one day become as important to Chiara as her father and I are. His or her birth will also mark one of the most crucial identity changes in Chiara's life. No longer our baby, no longer an only child, she will become, for the rest of her life, a big sister. She has no idea what she's in for. The parenting books tell a grim tale. They say, nothing you say or do will prevent your older child from feeling a certain amount of jealousy and envy for the new baby. For parents who want to soothe their child with comforting words, one book suggests that you think about how your spouse would react to the following statements. I loved you so much that I decided to have another one. I decided to have another one so you wouldn't be lonely. All of you will be equally special to me. How many of us would take that sitting down? All this considered, we seem to be doing all right so far. Chiara is almost 3 now and rapidly racing past toddlerhood. Her enthusiasm for being a big girl is serving us well. She seems excited at the prospect of having someone littler than her around a house. Already, she impatiently checks my belly, then sighs and asks, "Can't it come out yet?" Still, my husband and I are bracing ourselves for what lies ahead, for the general obnoxiousness that will follow the birth of our second child, the inevitable battle for attention, regressive behaviors. Even her newly acquired potty training may suffer briefly. We're ready for tough times ahead. At the same time, though, we are preparing ourselves emotionally for the eventual conspiracy which will rise up against us. A rebellion, after all, can't be successful unless it has both a leader and a follower. Chiara's influence over her new sibling will be unparalleled, least of all by us. I have no doubt who will hold sway. We can only hope they'll keep us in our old age. So what does the future hold for us? Besides petty jealousies, teasing, tattletelling, fighting, and lots of quarreling? We are also looking forward to not knowing about those private moments that only siblings can share. Made-up sibling languages, secret confidences, scrapes and mutual cover-ups, even the griping and complaining we all must do about our parents. And we intend to give them lots of love. Love that will see them through all manner of sibling rivalry, now and for the rest of their lives. This is dedicated to Jason Kuo, my big brother and partner in crime. For Mind's Eye Radio, I am Charlotte Kuo Benitez.
Baby brother just about to run me out of my mind. Said, man, can I go fishing with you? To come on down to my favorite fishing hole. What you think that brother mine did do? Caught a sunbound bird, shoot him, bottom, glim, he got him now. Take him home to mama, say he is real gone, come on. Honey and his, he is going fishing. Yes, he going fishing, and the baby going fishing too.
Switched at birth. Sounds like a tabloid headline, doesn't it? Franzel used to think so, until she met a woman named Mary, whose biological sister, Sue, really had been switched at birth. Fran talks with Mary about both her sisters, and how the two families finally discovered the truth about the switch over 40 years ago.
I think from the time that my mother brought home what she thought might possibly be the wrong baby, this became common knowledge in our family. And the reason she had that suspicion was two things. The one I knew about was that the baby weighed a whole lot less, I think, or a whole lot more than the birth certificate said.
Oh.
And the other thing that my mother has said since we straightened this out is that this baby sneezed a lot in a way that none of us had. And I always discounted that, but it was the weight thing that was, it was like a pound.
So is there some conjecture in how it actually did happen?
The other woman had been in labor for many hours. My mother came to the hospital and had her baby within 20 minutes. And I don't know which was born first.
Uh-huh.
So it was a mix-up, obviously, there in the delivery room or right afterward when they were before they put the bracelets on. Because my mother said it was, and the other mother said it was the same baby that was always brought to them.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was the very same baby. One was a forceps delivery, and that was, you know, it was clear from how the baby looked that was true. Yeah, so they never saw any other baby, you know, consciously, other than the baby that they took home.
So at some point, was it your mother who decided to find her true biological daughter?
Well, my mother, when she suspected this, looked in the paper to find out what child might have been born at the same time and found out who that was and kind of looked into this woman lived in the town where the baby was born. We lived in the town next door, about 17 miles away, and so she became aware of who the family was. I think she did meet the other mother. I know she did, because what she said is she would mention to the other woman, the other mother, you know, don't you think that, you know, your daughter looks more like our friend, and vice versa. And this woman just thought she was being crazy.
Huh.
I know they have a picture of her when she graduated from high school. And in fact, they invited that family with Sue to our house. And they have a picture of Martha, my sister, who grew up with us, and Sue, the sister who didn't grow up with us, together at that time at their high school graduation,
wow,
age 18.
And they were 10 years younger than you?
Yes.
Both the sisters?
Yeah.
So then you actually met Sue.
Sue
was the one.
Sue was the one I didn't grow up with.
You met, how long ago did you actually meet her for the first time?
I think it was about 5 years ago. What happened is that I think it was the 40-somethwedding anniversary of the other couple, they invited my parents to their wedding anniversary, and my father, he agreed to go too with my mother. And I think this was the first time he had ever, other than this high school graduation event, that he'd ever gone and taken a real interest in this. He had always kind of discounted that this could be true, you know, it would ruin the doctor's reputation if it were, and you know, one child is as good as another, kind of those are the things he would say. And but he did go along to this anniversary. And he saw my sister Sue, and he said, you know, I don't need any DNA testing. You know, I know she's my daughter because she and I look very, very much alike. So he just was sure at that point. And that was what set in motion the attempt to get together and let the other family really know. They did some DNA testing.
Oh, they did?
Yes, they did. They took my parents' blood and Sue and Martha's. So it was those, but not the other family. And they found out on one test where there were 4 points that they were comparing that, you know, there was no point of comparison at all with my parents. She couldn't have been my parents' child. And the other family didn't go through. They did this before they contacted the other family.
And it was years later.
Well, no, they did this. They did this 5 years ago. After my father had seen Sue and said, you know, she's my daughter. This kind of gave my mother the go-ahead and the rest of the family to do the go-ahead.
So what were your feelings? You said you look like your sister Sue.
You know, it was a wonderful thing to meet a sister that I was never sure that I had before and to find out all the similarities that we have. Martha, the sister I grew up with, who is not my biological sister, we had always noticed was different in many ways from the rest of the family. For example, all of us are nearsighted as can be. She doesn't wear glasses. We're all pretty tall and thin. And she was kind of chubby and shorter. We all had kind of darker hair. And she had very, very blonde hair and still does. So it's been hard for Martha, though that family, even though it was a bombshell to them, accepted in a very short time the fact that she was their daughter. And Martha met with her, there's one sibling in that family, a brother, and they just like bonded immediately.
Wow.
And my sister Sue, who grew up in the other family, said that she had always felt like she didn't really belong in that family. She would say, you know, I'm so tall, I don't think I belong in this family. That's how she would express it. And they would say, well, there is an aunt who is tall. So they would kind of explain it, but she always had trouble really believing it.
Just an amazing story. what about, has this changed your notion of sisterhood, the concept of sisterhood, or?
Well, you know, it's really changed. You know, I used to think more that environment had a lot to do with people's personalities and how they were. When this happened in our family and I actually met my sister and saw how close she was in many ways to the way our family was, even though she hadn't grown up in it, and how much Martha was like the family, her biological family, it made me think so much more that heredity is so strong. And I just hadn't believed that before.
And what about this idea of love? I mean, you feel like your sister Martha was included in the family in the same ways as the biological children.
Yeah, I don't feel any different toward my sister Martha. I feel she's as much a sister as Sue is. I didn't feel like I lost a sister. I felt like I gained another sister.
I wonder how Sue and Martha, it sounds like they must have a very unusual relationship do they have a real strong relationship?
No, I think it's more problematical for them. Very much more problematical for them to have the relationship between them. It's not exactly a competition, but it's you know, how accepted are you in the family? Mm-hmm. Both these daughters visit the opposite families. They visit both at the same time when they come to Wisconsin. Neither lives in Wisconsin, but, you know, they gained another family in a way. But I think it was a loss for them as well to think, you know, that they grew up in a family that was not their biological mm-hmm. family, and now they lost all that time with their biological family. And so it's harder for them, I think. I wonder whether back there in 1950, whether if they'd followed up, if they would have gotten any satisfaction, because a nurse who was present there at the time that apparently they were switched swears that it couldn't happen mm-hmm. still.
Definitely.
And maybe that happened more often than you think. If you have babies born basically at the same time, and this was a small hospital, and, you know, it probably didn't happen all that often that two babies were born mm-hmm. that close together.
Wow. Human error.
Yeah, human error.
We've been talking to Mary, a Madison, Wisconsin school teacher, about the experience of finding one of her sisters was switched at birth, and what it meant to meet a new sister, keep the old one, and gain a new one. Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Is Fran Zell reporting for Mind's Eye Radio.
Most of us remember going through phases as a kid when we hated our siblings. We'd fantasize that we were the long-lost child of exotic parents living like royalty in a far-off land, or that we had other siblings who'd treat us much better than the ones that we were stuck with. Laura Poland was one of those children, and only recently found out that perhaps there was an element of truth in her daydreams.
When I was growing up, I liked to think I had a double, a mirror image who was perfectly attuned to my thoughts and feelings. No matter how rotten and cruel my own sisters were, I could always console myself by thinking of her, and knowing if only she didn't live in the deserts of Mongolia, she would be at my side, defending me against my cold, unfeeling siblings. Modern technology has brought to light some fascinating aspects of life in the womb that might make this fantasy not as far-fetched as it sounds. This includes the vanishing twin syndrome. Twins are conceived, but only one develops and survives. Everything about twin statistics is fascinating. The exact percentages of fraternal twinning differs according to geographical region and ethnic heritage. The highest rate belongs to the Yoruba tribe in Nigeria, about 1 in 22. Asian countries have the lowest twinning rate. In Japan, the rate is 1 in every 254 births. This leads scientists to believe there's a strong genetic component of fraternal twins. In contrast, the rate of identical twins, 1 in 250 pregnancies, is nearly constant in all races and ethnic groups. One quarter of identical twins are mirror twins, a reflection of each other. Features such as birthmarks, hair whorls, or internal organs appear on opposite sides of each twin. The more common use of ultrasound has led to an increased identification of the vanishing twin syndrome, much more than in the past. One out of every 90 births is a live twin birth, and through ultrasound, it is now believed that possibly 1 in 10 of us start as twins, where the other dies without a trace. Where does the second baby go? One explanation is the mother miscarries one of the twins and doesn't know it, thus the term vanishing twin. Scientists theorize that the other twin was absorbed by the surviving twin. The earlier the twin disappears, the more likely there will be no trace of its existence. In rare instances, a baby will be born with the sibling still attached, as a cyst, an extra limb, or as more internal organs than is normal. On the internet, you can find sites where people are convinced that these twins have been tampered with by extraterrestrials. You'll also find touching accounts of parents who've been told by their doctor that one of their twins have died. They feel the grief of the loss and also great anxiety over the health of the surviving twin. When I think of my youthful fantasies and what I've learned, I get an uncanny feeling that most of us will never know if we started life as a twin and ended up as a singleton. This is Laura Poland from Mind's Eye Radio.
This year marks the 51st annual Twinorama, held in Cassville, a small town located in southwest Wisconsin along the Mississippi River. Twins, both identical and fraternal, come from all over the upper Midwest to celebrate twinhood. We thought this was an ample opportunity to find out what it's like to be a twin.
The youngest twins are Haley and Courtney Menier, 3.5 months old, from Clintonville, Iowa. Their parents are Mike and Rena.
And we've got banners for Jesus.
This is a Lafayette County Shamrock Float. Irish Leprechaun Twins. Oh, neat.
Okay, our least liked twins, age 35 and older, are Charlene Berkheimer and Sheila Zolinski. They're 65 years old. Charlene's from Edgerton, Wisconsin, and Sheila's from Janesville. This is Lavona and Lavelda Richmond from Aurora, Illinois, and they're twins married to twins, and Al in there is married to Lavona.
Getting us confused.
Yeah.
That's the biggest part. Because we don't live that far apart. And when I go to La Crosse, I'm from Mount Sterling. Why, they just confuse us all the time.
Well, we're really close. You know, when we were younger, we weren't as close. But now we've grown and have a good friendship. And, you know, it's having somebody you can always talk to and they know exactly what you're thinking. Yeah. Being called the twins, not individuals. We were always the twins. Yeah.
Well, we're proud of all our twins. My twin and I were raised by our aunt, and she also had twin grandsons and twin great-grandsons, so she was very proud of all our twins. Well, we have a lot of cousins, too. We have 3 sets of cousins on our side that are twins. On our dad's side and on our mother's side, there's also several sets of twins.
So we make this a family thing every year at the Twinorama. You know, a family gathering on the Twinorama Day.
I'm Danielle.
And I'm Daisha.
We're from Lansing,
Iowa.
We're 21. We were in the most alike, you know, because obviously we're identical or whatever, but our personalities are different. We're similar in a lot of ways, but our personality, you know, our personalities are a little bit different. So.
Everyone says that I'm the evil twin or outgoing twin, and she's the good angel, perfect. Mom thinks that too, but what she don't know don't hurt her.
We're really close, so yeah. We usually always make plans with each other.
We try.
And if our boyfriends want to come along, they can, but...
But yeah, we don't like to be apart, you know, and
no.
So... And, yeah. We're really close.
Yep. Went to college at 2 different colleges our first semester and
couldn't do it.
Didn't work out, so I transferred to her college and now we're going to live together this fall for the year. So. I think we'll be together forever.
Yeah.
She's always there for me. I'm always there for her.
Coming up next on Mind's Eye Radio, we'll hear from a woman who's harassed by her mentally ill sister, say a final goodbye to a well-loved sibling, and visit several people who have more siblings than the Waltons. Stay with us. Growing up in a home with a mentally ill child puts all other siblings at risk of developing a mental illness later in life. From secrecy and shame to neglect and fear, siblings of the mentally ill often live erratic and unpredictable lives. Kelly Warren reports on a woman whose sister is manic depressive. The story contains sensitive language that may not be suitable for all listeners.
My sister was first diagnosed as having schizoid tendencies when she was 14 and I was 15.
Diane is a 43-year-old woman who grew up as the middle child of a wealthy family. She remembers how she tried to convince her parents that her sister's strange behavior was more than just a phase.
it wasn't right that my younger sister was spending all her time in her room. And then she got involved in drugs and would sit in the basement and laugh and talk to herself. She even thought she was Leon Russell for a while.
At the age of 16, Diane's sister Karen was diagnosed with manic depression or bipolar disorder. This mental illness typically begins in adolescence or young adulthood and affects some 2 million Americans, men and women, equally. The symptoms manifest in mood swings from feeling overly high and irritable to sad and hopeless and back again, with some periods of normal mood in between.
When you have somebody who's emotionally disturbed in the family, I ended up walking on eggshells because you don't want to excite her. You want to keep everything smooth sailing. I can't remember a day that I wasn't bitten or my hair wasn't pulled or punched or kicked.
She remembers ever since she was a little girl, this younger child threatening her and really not feeling as if she got the attention that she needed from her parents.
Dr. Steve Stein is Diane's psychotherapist and is treating her for depression. He says that siblings of the mentally ill often put their own needs and feelings on hold while the sick child receives much of the attention, even if it's negative attention.
If you have an adolescent who's showing psychiatric and antisocial behaviors, it immediately puts all of the other siblings at risk.
Attempts at family therapy ended in disaster. Karen and her father began fighting on the therapist's office floor. After that, their mother concluded that they would never seek therapy again. Instead, the family went back to blaming drugs for Karen's behavior.
One thing you've got to realize is that it isn't just your family that you are pretending with. It spills over into your whole life. It's so much easier to pretend, but it's fear-based.
5 years ago, Karen stopped taking her medication lithium, a mood stabilizer, thinking that she was free of her illness. But manic depression is a lifelong disease, and to keep moods stable, ongoing treatment is needed.
She blamed me for all her problems. I think she was afraid I was going to try and commit her again. And so she started to leave threatening messages on my answering machine. They varied from actually her threatening to slit my throat, and foul language, of course, to saying that she had talked to bus drivers and train conductors and that they were going to get me.
Police said that I could no longer see my family anymore. But I would like to tell you that you're either going to be murdered or incarcerated, and I would prefer that you were murdered myself. And I hope the men murder you, and I think the Amtrak men might. I hope they do, you know. You're such an abusive cunt, and you're such an abusive bitch. You will be either murdered or incarcerated.
These recent threats have added to 25 years of Diane's fear of her sister's anger. But this time, during a recent visit home, it was different.
She got violent with me this weekend. For years, I would have avoided that at all costs. But as she attacked me, I held her off. It was nothing. I mean, I held her off like she was a fly or something.
For Diane, this was a huge burden lifted. But for Karen, she still refuses to take her medication, which is the primary reason that symptoms recur or worsen in the mentally ill. Dr. Steve Stein.
We do live in a society where you can't force treatment on people that don't really want it unless they're very profoundly dangerous to themselves or to others.
Today, Diane works as a high school counselor and advises students to deal with their emotions immediately and not pretend that their feelings aren't important.
I mean, it took me 40 years to realize that I had a fear-based existence. Yes, it is difficult, but the reward is that you feel so much better when you do it.
For the High Plains News Service, I'm Kelly Warren.
This story first aired on the High Plains News Service for a special program on mental health, sponsored by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. For the lucky ones, sibling relationships are a source of fond memories, ongoing acceptance, and support. For those who are less fortunate, a sibling relationship means only memories of pain, humiliation, and anger. Poet Jackie Wilson puts her relationship with her sister in the second category. Here she is with her poem, Medusa Revisited.
Her verbal glance turns my soft trust to stone, writhing tortured years of her hissing criticism, strangle a living love, to be replaced with dead space, freezing my potential in the suspended animation of living rock, aging but not aging, aging but not growing. No Perseus came flying on winged heels to hold her up to the polished shield of reflection. I am doomed to survive as a moving statue turned inward, roaming an inner wasteland of fossilized emotion. This is Jackie Wilson for Mind's Eye Radio.
When sibling relationships do work out, we forge some of the strongest connections in our lives. And having to say goodbye to that bond becomes one of the toughest things we'll ever do. Here's Evie Thompson.
10 years ago, my sister Nancy passed away from breast cancer. She died at home, and this poem is about the last few days I spent with her. Fuchsia. Your finger traced the paisley pattern in the comforter, the fuchsia of your fingernails echoing the fuchsia in the swirls. The many other colors there were like the complexity of your life, hang gliding, cleaning old barn bricks to build your showplace house, and raising your son, tall, coffee and cream colored, long and slim, like his Maasai warrior father. So thin, you were like a sack of loosely joined flesh and brittle bone, bloated at the abdomen, fine fuzz on your almost bald head. Mind wandering, perhaps moving between the two worlds. Intermittently, you rose and straightened up the house in a sad charade of earlier chores, not knowing, as you ripped sheets from bed, that you were undoing, not doing. You tore my heart. "Help me," you commanded. And so I seized and tugged and piled them on the floor. This is Evie Thompson from Mind's Eye Radio.
In his poem, One Simple Move, Lynn Patrick Smith tells of a memorable day spent with his brothers.
My two brothers and I were watching a Three Stooges movie in the living room. The blurry TV screen turned Larry, Moe, and Curly into an early warning. Our babysitter, Ellen, wanting to hear Marie's the name of his latest flame, flipped through her record collection at our kitchen table. Outside, a thunderstorm shook more ominously than the Elvis Presley hips parents of teenage girls had been warned against. On the TV, Larry became as frizzled as his hair. A scary sizzle came from down the hall as the clock radio in our parents' bedroom caught lightning. I left my brothers behind to follow Ellen, saw the flames taking aim at the hall and Ellen shutting the door, one simple move that confined the fire to just one room. She then got us safely to the neighbor's house, and later at our grandmother's, we all watched the account of our rescue on the evening news. This is Lynn Patrick Smith for Mind's Eye Radio.
In these busy days of families struggling to raise 1.2 children, it's hard for many of us to imagine a life with 4 or 5, let alone 10 children. Mark Karstedt grew up as the 9th of 10 children and found that the love and support generated by that many hearts far outweighs the costs.
I was raised in a Midwest Catholic family. My father worked outside the home, my mother inside the home, and 10 kids formed a bond that thrives today. I'm number 9. I have 3 older brothers, 5 older sisters, and 1 younger sister. We were all born within a span of 13 years. Mom actually gave birth 11 times, but the second oldest, Patricia, died during infancy. There was a time in the late 70s and early 80s when we were spread out around the globe. But in recent years, we've all returned to within an hour or so of our nest in southeast Wisconsin. I like being near my siblings again and enjoy our closeness. People often ask if we all get along, and my answer is always yes. Sure, we have our differences and have fought. When we were younger, some of these fights, at least among the boys, became very physical and even bloody. But we always made up and talked our way through the problem. Today, we counsel each other both emotionally and spiritually. We even financially protect each other. People outside the family are impressed with the unity and continual expressions of love. We greet with hugs and kisses. This tradition of expressing our love has been passed on to the 9 in-laws, 28 grandchildren, and 3 great-grandchildren. It takes a long time to say hello and goodbye to the 52 people at family gatherings. This all may sound like the ideal family, but it has not been without hardship. Like when I was 10, and my oldest brother Ken, who was 18, was run over by a car. His injuries were severe, and he'd never walk or use his arms again. If the paralysis wasn't enough, the weight of the car damaged his internal organs, and for a year he was in intensive care. All 11 of us rallied to his side. For the following 7 years, my siblings, parents, and I were his primary caregivers. Every day we bathed him, dressed his wounds, turned him throughout the night, and transported him from place to place. To say the accident dramatically changed our lives is an understatement. It forever altered our family, although it did bring us even closer together. Ken's situation, his personal strength, and will to survive taught us all many lessons, mostly how fragile life is. It showed us the value of setting aside differences and the relationship with a higher power, which makes life worth living. Now, 30 years later, my brother is financially self-supportive due to his own determination and the strong work ethic with which we were all raised. Every evening, my sister's families bring him dinner and assist him with personal and home care needs. My wife and I are in the process of uprooting ourselves to live with my brother Ken. We struggle with the change and ask ourselves why leave the community that offers us cultural richness, career opportunities, and a network of like-minded friends. Deep inside my heart, I trace back over the years with my siblings, and I know the answer. He's blood. It's to embrace the longest of relationships and be cradled in the familiar arms of the love that can only come from siblings. For Mind's Eye Radio and the entire Karstead clan, this is Mark James von Karstead.
Siblings can be best buddies or jealous rivals. They can also teach and mentor each other with gentle guidance that leads to mastery and independence for the student. Composer Paul Thompson portrays this process in a duet called Her Brother Taught Her to Waltz, played here by Wisconsin Youth Symphony Orchestra members Leslie Wojtok on flute and Alex Foxcroft Knopp on cello.
Thank you.
What do you remember most about growing up with your siblings? The games, the laughter, the fights? To poet Gay Davidson-Zilski, it's the sound.
Coming from a family of nine, I guess I know what noise is. My days from ages 3 to 5 were accompanied by tractor whine and conveyors chuckling hay to loft, corn to crib. My 6 sisters, mumbling like pigeons, preening rustle of netting, the can-cans and whistle of rayon. I know the exciting report of my lone brother's gun sending 10 cans jumping off fences. My father's pre-dawn hymns of security, shaking coal and cobs into a chilly grate, and the slam of heavy oven door after the rap of mother's palm dusting the biscuit pan. I guess I know what noise is. Some sounds were smells, like sausage's applause, the coffee popping like a gopher in the percolator's magical glass sphere. In school, I knew the sound of fear, my own Oxfords dragging to the blackboard, the derisive hiss of radiators, the must of books and the yes of clock hands, clicking off another day in stir. But there was then the constant ramble of other kids, always in motion, always in sound. Now a mother, I realize by 9 a.m. on certain days, all that will be left of sound is the refrigerator motor's respiration and late commuters' hum and dash before aloneness tamps me down so far I can hardly hear my own heart's rumbling valves. I miss terribly the see, see, see of my father's saw on sweet wood, my mother's mumbled imprecations accompanied by the this, that, and chug, chug of the wringer washer and metal tubs, the babbling nonsense dialogue and rapid prattlings of sisters playing house and brother cracking wise. If there's anything I know, it's noise. I also know all of us are in this state. If tables have it right, I'll outlive my husband if I make 65 all right. I know that it's a blessing to get to see the maple burst into light suddenly, silently. And in a way, I cherish the resounding, sudden absence of sound when my son, a single child, slams out the door. But part of me rebels that it's not right, in the short space of a life, to go from farm to family to crone, peering from my cave, becoming more alone. This is Gay Davidson-Zelsky for Mind's Eye Radio.
Friends, even spouses, come and go. Parents never know us when we're old and gray. Children never knew us when we were young. Only siblings share the full spectrum of our lives, creating a particularly strong bond that writer Sue Renard thinks is worth fighting for, as she tells in her radio drama, Negotiations.
Hello?
Hi, Charlene, it's me.
Oh, hi, sis. What's up?
I've got some bad news. It's Mom and Dad.
What happened?
They were in a car wreck.
Oh, my God. Are they all right?
The doctors can't say yet. Mom's unconscious and might slip into a coma. Dad has some broken bones and maybe some internal injuries. Can you come over?
Okay, sure. I mean, I'll drive over as soon as I can arrange things. I can be there in a couple of hours. Are you going to call Jack and Toby?
Yes.
You know Jack won't come if I'm there. We haven't spoken in 5 years.
It's been that long?
Yep.
I really don't want to deal with this now. This is an emergency. Can't you patch things up or let it go?
Well, you'll just have to ask him now, won't you? It's not my fault.
I don't want to get into this, Charlene.
I mean, just because he's my brother, it doesn't mean I have to agree with everything he does. All I said back then was that he couldn't bring his live-in girlfriend into my house.
And then ended up calling him a cradle robber.
I've got kids to think of. I don't care what he does in his own time, but I've got a right to control what goes on in my own house, don't I? And besides, he's the one that started the yelling.
Yes, yes, but that's beside the point now. We've been through this hundreds of times before. Are you coming?
Yes, I'm coming. I'll plan on staying at Mom and Dad's house for a few days. I'll see you soon. Bye.
Hello.
Hi, Jack. It's me. I've got some bad news. Mom and Dad were in a car wreck. So I wanted everyone to come down. How soon can you get here?
I'm not going to come if Charlene is there. I can't stand being in the same room as her. She's such a... Well, You know what she is.
Oh, stop already. That's ancient history. This is now. Mom's in bad shape, and Dad keeps asking for you. You've got to come.
If Mom's really in a coma, she won't know the difference. And with you and Charlene there, Dad will have all the support he needs. I'm just not going to stay under the same roof as Charlene.
I can't believe you think your stupid, ridiculous fight with Charlene is more important than Mom and Dad. Stay in the hotel for pity's sake. I'll work out a visiting schedule so you won't have to see Charlene. You'll regret this for the rest of your life if you don't come.
I said I'll think about it.
I don't have time for this, Jack. I'm asking for your help here. I don't mind taking care of Mom and Dad most of the time since I live so close. But this is different.
I was wondering when you'd bring that up.
What do you mean?
Playing the martyr. The sainted sister who takes care of the aging parents while the rest of us callous offspring live miles away.
I've never said anything like that.
You didn't have to. It's in your tone of voice.
I don't mean it to be. I actually like living close to Mom and Dad. It's great that my kids get to see their grandparents. But I don't want to argue. Are you coming or not?
Oh, like I said, I'll think about it.
I hate making these phone calls. Come on, Toby, pick up the darn phone.
Howdy, howdy.
Hey, baby bro. It's your big sis calling. I've got some bad news. Mom and Dad were in a car wreck.
God, I'm just glad they're alive. How are you doing?
I'm holding in there, but I could really use some help with this.
I suppose I'm the last person you called.
Well, yes. I talked to Charlene and Jack already. Why do you ask?
No reason. You just always call us in descending order, oldest to youngest. Are the Hetfields and McCoys going to come?
Well, they're both mumbling about not wanting to be in the same room with each other. You know the story.
Hard to believe they used to be so close when we were kids. I was always kind of jealous. Do you want me to talk to them?
I think Charlene's coming, but Jack wouldn't commit. Ain't that a surprise? He pouts like a 3-year-old sometimes. I just want to shake him. And Charlene can be so damn stubborn.
Just like Dad and the rest of us.
Are you coming?
Yeah, but I can't get away tomorrow. I'm in charge of a charity rollerblade tournament this weekend, and I just have to find someone else to take care of all the details. I'll be there on Friday. Call me tomorrow night with an update, okay?
Okay. And thanks, Toby. I appreciate the support.
No problem, sis. Now go get some rest. I'll call the hospital to check on Mom and Dad. I'm sure they'll be all right. And I'll call Jack and make sure he comes. Sayonara.
Hello?
Hey there, Jack. It's your little brother calling.
Toby, how are you, Bingo? Haven't heard from you in months.
I know. And don't call me Bingo. I answer to Toby now that I'm a certified grown-up.
Oh, I hadn't realized. Congratulations, Mr. Tobias, sir. Are you calling about Mom and Dad?
Yeah. Marty says you're thinking of not coming because Charlene may be there.
I told her I'd think about it. So I'm thinking.
Well, don't you think it's time you put this fight behind you? You know what a strain that's been on Mom and Dad, not being able to have you both at Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas Eve. It's hurt the whole family.
Hey, don't put this on me, Toby. Charlene started the whole damn thing.
I just can't believe you guys have stayed mad so long. You used to be so close. And you were always getting into trouble together. You remember that time back in high school when you and Charlene cut class and got caught speeding in Dad's car?
God. That was a hoot. I was scared stiff that Dad would ground us for life.
And wasn't it Charlene who tutored you in math?
Yeah. I probably would have flunked out if it hadn't been for her.
So don't you think she deserves a break?
This is different, Bingo. She basically told me I had no morals and would be a bad influence on her kids.
She didn't really mean it, Jack. Don't you miss not being able to see the twins, your only nephews? They're 7 years old now.
I guess I do. And I kind of miss Charlene, too. But I just can't come back with my tail between my legs like I've done something wrong when I haven't. And I'm still living with Abby, so Charlene will just rake me over the coals again.
I'm not taking sides in this argument, Jack. All I'm asking is that you come back and give things a try. I'm sure Mom and Dad would really like it if we could all be there together.
Well, all right. I'll be there. Are you coming?
I can't make it till Friday, but I'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Hello?
Hey, Toby, it's me. Checking in on Thursday as ordered. Got some good news for a change.
About Mom and Dad?
Yep. Dad is resting comfortably now. He has a headache and a big cast on his leg, but he's going to be fine.
What about Mom?
She's still pretty groggy, but there doesn't seem to be any permanent brain damage. She couldn't talk much today, but it seemed like she recognized us at least. What a relief.
God, that's great news.
And there's more.
More?
You won't believe where I am now.
Where?
I'm at home.
What's so exciting about that?
I'm at home because Charlene and Jack are at the hospital together.
You're kidding.
I was in Dad's hospital room with Charlene when Jack walked in. He and Charlene just stood there, glaring at each other. Then Dad said, "Stop this nonsense and make up. You two are peas in a pod, and I refuse to let you hurt your mother any longer over some pigeon-headed comments you both made years ago." Charlene said, "Peas in a pod," and Jack said, "That's what you used to call us when we got into trouble as kids." They just looked at each other and started laughing. Jack asked about the twins, and Charlene started pulling out pictures. They were sitting there talking when I left. I don't know if it'll last, but at least it broke the ice.
I knew they couldn't stay mad forever. I can't believe we'll all be together tomorrow. It's been a long time. Can you give me the direct phone number for Dad's hospital room? I want to give him a call.
Okay, got a pencil?
Uh-huh.
It's 555.
Hello?
Hi, Dad. It's me. I was calling to check in. How are you?
Could be worse. I got me on those pain pills.
It's hard to hear you, Dad. What's all that racket going on behind you?
Hmm? Oh, that's Charlene and Jack. They're arguing about who started their fight.
Oh, jeez. It's not starting all over again, is it?
Well, they're calling each other names. They may start arm wrestling in any minute.
I remember them doing that all the time when they were kids.
Yeah, feels like the old days. Next thing you know, they'll be stealing my car again.
Hey,
you two stop arguing.
Okay,
stop it.
You've been listening to Sibling Relations on Mind's Eye Radio, written by the Mind's Eye Radio Collective in Madison, Wisconsin. The show was produced by Kelly Warren and co-produced by Sue Renard. Contributing writers include Esther Cameron, Gay Davidson-Zilski, Charlotte Quo Benitez, Laura Polin, Sue Renard, Karen Schultz, Lynn Patrick Smith, Evie Thompson, Paul Thompson, Mark James von Karstedt, Kelly Warren, Greg Willard, Jackie Wilson, and Fran Zell. Original music by Barbara Chusett. The Mind's Eye Radio players include Ken Allen, Sarah Austin, Buck Hakes, and Sue Renard. If you would like more information about Mind's Eye Radio, catch our website at www.mindseyeaudio.com.